Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Wednesday, February 22nd edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On today's show, got a few earnings to run through still. Papa John's from yesterday, First Solar, Garmin, and we're going to talk about that that Burger King and Popeyes merger, also Mobileye and Toll Brothers reporting this morning. Our first guest will be at 8:15. That is Kirk Duplessis. He is the founder and head trader at Options Alpha and Options Education site. And then at 8:35, we're going to be joined by Mark Yusko. He's the CEO and CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management. That's a hedge fund down in North Carolina. He manages about $4 billion in assets. So looking forward to having Kirk and Mark on today's show. Joel, how are we doing in the markets this morning?
Man, Spencer, it seems like it's been so long since we've done the show.
Yeah, very funny.
there's a travesty going on in the market here. The S&P futures are down 375. But as Dennis said during the pre-market show, you just know it's going to end up green by the end of the day. So we'll see if that rings true. We tested the all-time high overnight. That's 2365. All-time high, that is it. We came up short at 6375. The close is an important number, 2360. And we're just hanging above the pre-market low of 55.25. Now, crude broke out over 54 yesterday, but hasn't followed through as of yet. You can see on the daily charts, had a lot of resistance at 54. Now we're above that level, but we're not getting the giddy up yet. Gold and silver both in the red here this morning. And as I'm looking at the top 11 components in the index, they're all in the red too. But Dennis, we know that's going to change quickly, right?
You can't keep a good market down here, Joel. I just look at this market and it seems like it's like Groundhog Day all the time. Whenever we get a pullback, it just seems like we end up green at the end of the day, or we find some reason to come in here and buy the dip. And it's just learned behavior. I mean, everybody has learned over the course of at least the last little while here, in the last few months, every time we buy a 1% pullback in the market, we're back at all-time highs the next day. So I don't know. It's going to take some type of crisis or something to buck that trend. But right now, portfolio managers and big money investors who are underweighted buy every little pullback on the indexes. And that's why we just can't get a sustained sell-off. I wish we could. I like down markets. I like trading down markets better than I like trading up markets. But this is a relentless bull here. And they keep coming in here and buying with two hands every time we pull back 1%.
All right. So let's get to some stocks. Now, Rio is trading down here. And I just looked on my Benzinga Pro, and I didn't see any news on it here. That's an ADS. So, Rio, Dennis, are you seeing anything on RIO?
Well, somebody was saying it's ex-dividend here, too, today. I'm not sure about that. I do not follow this company that closely. But, I'm just verifying here. It is ex-dividend today for $1.26, so there's your reason. So if you knock that off, the adjusted close is $44.89. So went out at $46.15. Your adjusted close for your ex-dividend is $44.89. We're down another dollar from there again. Maybe that has something to do. Well, I don't know what the reasoning is there. Spencer, is anything in the pro?
No, it's a dollar twenty-six
of it is ex-dividend, so that's, you know, 2/3 of it, and then it's obviously down another dollar from there. So maybe just more profit taking in here. But remember, this is trading as an ADR as well, so this is already trading overseas. I'm not sure where their actual, but you know, that's, you know, one thing to consider when you're trading ADRs this early in the morning. There's an active market already happening, probably over in Europe. So our price is just simply following the price over in Europe. So whether there's been some news or something on it today, or it's profit-taking, or it's, you know, selling off after the ex-dividend date, I'm not sure the actual reasons. But you'll see a 2-cent market on this thing very active right now. Bids and offers moving very actively. And that's to the machines. When you see the 85 and the 87s and the 88s, 87, 88. That's just moving off the price in Europe. So those high-frequency market makers are adjusting the U.S. price according to what the price is doing in Europe.
Dennis, ADR, we've explained this before. Ethan G is asking him what an ADR is. You just want to go into that real quick?
Stands for American Depository Receipt. Basically, you know, in a nutshell, the ADR is just, you know, the U.S. traded version of the security that's traded overseas. So primary market is somewhere, and I'm not sure where Rio Tinto's primary. I'm assuming it's in Europe. And Rio Tinto here is traded as an ADR, so it is American Depository Receipt. Again, the price of that is just going to be contingent on what the price is doing in Europe. So you basically take whatever the currency is on where the company is domiciled times, you know, the U.S. exchange rate will give you the U.S. price.
I think it's London is where it's traded at.
Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Okay,
and
so I guess, over in London.
I guess ADS would be American Depository Shares as opposed to...
Yeah, they're similar. I mean, there's little technical differences there, but, you know, basically it's just, you know, the U.S. traded version of the foreign company.
All right, just looking in the lower mid 42 handle on that, if you really go into reverse on that, I see a series of 3 out of 4 lows at the 42.50 area, so keep an eye on that if we get down there. All right,
I just want to make one more point here,
sure.
Just on ADRs, is obviously, you know, we are the secondary market here, so our technicals don't seem to mean quite as much as probably it does in the primary market. I usually like to look at it, what it looks like its own currency, especially when I'm trading Canadian stocks versus U.S. stocks. I always like to look at the Canadian chart because, you know, there's currency factors involved in the U.S. pricing of this where, you know, the real market is over there in Europe. So it's sometimes fun to go look at, you know, what the actual chart looks like in its home currency.
Okay. All right. Now let's get, we had some big earnings after the close yesterday,
sure,
and some this morning.
Now, First Solar, let's jump over to those ones, Spencer. That was your big one reporting there last night, got the pop. And now it's getting the drop for solar earnings.
$1.24 versus 97 cents. This is for Q4 revenue, $480 million versus $412 million. So nice beat for the fourth quarter. They also raised their fiscal year 17 revenue from $2.5 to $2.6 billion. Now it's $2.8 to $2.9 billion. And their EPS, they see that being 0 cents to 50 cents. That's in line with the 41 cent estimate.
It got the pop. I was trading up the majority of last night, and now you look at it here, and it's reversed course here. Now it's trading actually in the red by over a dollar. Stock that had run up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, looks like 6 or 7 green out of 8 days, just in the month of February here on the most recent run. So stock had run up into the report. They beat. Maybe they just didn't do good enough. What was the high last night, Joel? Because I did see this thing trading higher.
38.56 on the initial spike, but now we're back down. Meriden trading into 35 handle. I would just keep an eye on yesterday's low 35.14 because look out below if we can't hold there. Three lows at the 33.60 area. Coming back on the upside here, I'm sure a lot of people would like to see that close of 36.62 as a potential exit point. That's the highest the issue's traded in 2017.
Jumping over here just to a couple other earnings reports. Let's go to the ones this morning because there's a couple big ones here from this morning. Mobileye, MBLY. This stock is popping here in the pre-market, up over 2.5%. Spencer, give us the numbers for Mobileye.
Yeah, this is they're the supplier to Taser. Is that correct?
Tesla.
Are they still? I thought Tesla dumped them.
Maybe this is your backup cameras, right?
Is this not, you know,
yes,
your technology? Yeah.
That's what I thought. Q4 adjusted EPS, 22 cents versus 20 cents. So a slight beat there. Revenue, 104.6 versus 96.4. So a beat on both.
Stock getting a nice lift here. I mean, I think people want an excuse to buy this thing, too. Like, this thing has started to come back here. You start looking at where it was, you know, to where it is. It's starting to show some life here. I mean, back in July of, you know, just going back a year ago, they were actually a year and a half ago, July of 2015, we were a $60 stock. And then we had the huge sell-off at the beginning of 2016. We got all the way down to $23. Now we're kind of in the middle, $46. Now we're trading $47.30 in the pre-market. If you just scroll out and look at your monthly charts there is a pile of resistance up at $50, but that's $2.5 away. But you start analyzing, you know, I always like to look out a little bit further. I like the daily almost the best when I'm trading something, especially on an earnings report, because it gives you a feel for where you've been. You know, you look at these tick charts, you look at these short-term stuff. I mean, you know, it doesn't give you as much perspective as a daily sometimes does, especially when you have a stock that's volatile off of earnings. Already trade 130,000 shares here, 47.45. So we're $2.5 away from 50. You know, that's, you know, a little bit further, maybe not a number to think about. about today. But if you know you bought this thing, you know, in the lower 40s, it could be a target for you.
Still trading in the green here, so keep an eye on the high from yesterday, 47.20. That will get you into a gap situation. Also, the recent highs of the move have been right there, 47.20. You had a 47.22 print. So I'd really like to see it hold there, maybe go back up and challenge that pre-market high of 48.95.
Then you had another retailer this morning. Obviously, we were still in retailer earnings season, so we're going to do a few here this morning. TJX is a big one, discount retail that everybody watches. Stock trading slightly higher here in the pre-market. 76.80 is just where it ticked. Only 1,700 shares, though, so price discovery is still happening after this morning's report.
I don't think they reported yet.
Oh, TJX hasn't reported yet.
Mm.
Oh, well, that would explain why it's only traded 1,700 shares. So some people are buying it up ahead of the report then.
If you're one of those people that are buying it up and you get a print up near 77.50, that could be some resistance. Last two highs at 77.41 and 45, your three-day high at 78.08.
Yeah, so we are waiting on the TJX report. I think they always do that to us. It's usually 8:30. So, Spencer, break in with the TJX numbers when you get them. Somebody's excited, though, and they're thinking it's going to be good because it's already trading up here in the pre-market. Actually, somebody just hit it at 76.20, so it's back flat. 80-cent spread is really wide here ahead of the earnings results. You also had, last night, just jumping over to Papa John's Pizza. What do you got, Spencer?
No, go for it. Sorry, I was going to interrupt with Garmin, but pizza, too, so...
Yeah, I want to do pizza. It's trading down 5% here in the pre-market. One of the coolest ticker symbols, P Zebra Zebra A, for Papa John's. How'd they do?
69 cents versus 66 cents. Sales of $439.6 million versus $446.85 was the estimate. So a miss on the sales number, but a beat on the EPS.
Getting ahead here, Joel. Talk to us about some levels.
Oh, man, these stocks have just had such tremendous runs. It's hard to, you know, pick an absolute support level. We are bearing down on the low of the year, 81.05. That was your Feb 6 low, the low for the year. So I'd keep an eye on that. We're not holding that. You can use your psychological 80 as a minor support level. But to me, 81 is going to be the key to the session. If, in fact, you can hold that 81 level, I could see us trading into the 70 handle. And you do have a low at 79.02 on November 9th. Coming back on the upside, I mean, it's going to take a big rally to get back to fill the gap at 84.71. But holding 81 is key for Papa John's.
You want to jump over to Garmin there, Spencer?
Sure. Remember we had Andy Swan on the show, what was it, Friday, saying they had seen some negative sentiment from Garmin in the fourth quarter. It doesn't seem to have affected the quarter too much, though. Q4 adjusted EPS, 73 cents versus 57 cents. Sales, 861 million versus 793 million, so beat on both numbers. They also see their fiscal year 17 adjusted EPS at $2.65. That's 2 cents short of the estimate, and sales were a slight beat, $3.02 billion versus $2.97 billion.
It's been a comeback for this one here, too. The lows at the beginning of 2016 when we had our last little bear market there, if you could call it a bear market, got down to $30.93. We're now up here at $54, and we're within striking distance. Not striking distance, but the all-time high was way back in 2014 at $61, $62 actually. So within $8 of the all-time high, which actually is pretty impressive here for Garmin.
Yeah, when you think about the competition from Apple and the GPSs, just going to give you the pre-market high of $55.47 because that corresponds with a monthly high as well. Well, actually, it's just below that. 56.19 was your high back in August of 2016. So there's two levels for you. Pre-market high, 55.47 and 56.19. It is 8:15, Spencer. Who do we got on deck?
We got Kirk Duplessis. He is an options trader. He's the founder of OptionsAlpha.com. He's the head trader there as well. He's an options guy, so we're going to talk about that with Kirk. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's pre-market prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkann, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel. And we have a guest on by request. That's Kirk Duplessis. He is founder and head trader at Options Alpha. Kirk, how you doing today?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. So, head trader at Options Alpha, just give us a little bit of your background here and how you ended up being involved in the options market.
Yeah, man. Stumbled into it. Knew I wanted to do something by myself. I never was good working for other people. So that's I guess I got into it. But I worked in New York for Deutsche Bank for a little while as a M&A banker. Had a rotation on a trading desk. That's where I really got, I guess, exposure to it. But, just that was really kind of it on the institutional side. Jumped over the Chinese wall, ended up working in REITs as an analyst, realized I didn't like that side of the business either, and then started trading by myself. So that's kind of how I got into it. I've made a lot of mistakes, and here I am still kicking.
All right. Do you have any good stories from when you worked on the trading floor for Deutsche Bank? What our audience usually likes to hear is any good trading stories. You got one that is G-rated.
Yeah, you know, I think that actually, I don't know if it's from the trading floor, but when I switched over from M&A, we had probably, I mean, this was like during right before the crash when we were doing stuff, and this was late 2006, early 2007, and we had like five or six deals in the pipeline, gambling, oil and gas, and like they all just like collapsed in like a matter of like 2 weeks. And I remember my MD coming to me, and he's like, hey, yeah, now you guys should be looking for other things. He's like, we probably won't be here in about a year or so. So he was actually a very smart and very like foresight about everything. So I do vividly remember him bringing us into the room and saying, all of our deals that we've been working on for the last 2 years are basically done. So
wow, a little bit of history there. So how did you turn to the options market? And how did you educate yourself?
Yeah, so I got a regular finance degree, I guess, from most institutions, like most guys, to get to Wall Street, and had the experience there, with longhand calculations of Black-Scholes models and everything. Realized I liked it. It wasn't until I got up there that I kind of saw like the power of it and like the leverage that it had. I'm a big math guy, so I think the numbers and that side of it really attracted me to it. I've honestly never been good at picking stocks, and I realized that early on that I'm just really crappy at picking stocks and direction and everything. So for me, it was more of a math-based model that I've just continued to evolve. And so, over the course of the last, 6, 7, 8 years, doing this now, what we've done here at Option Alpha is try to, buy a lot of research, crunch a lot of data, and, see what kind of works. And so for me, it's kind of like a two-pronged approach. Like I do it for myself selfishly to see what works and kind of build models. And then we just end up like selling the research and the software.
A favorite book or mentor?
Yeah, I said that. I think we talked about this yesterday, but honestly, like, I'm not going to say this in a bad sense for anybody out there that's written a book. I think that all the books out there are fine. I just don't think that they're really actionable. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of books out there, like I'm blanking on his name, but he wrote the Options Pricing Manual. Like, that's a great book, right? It details everything, but it's not really actionable for people. So I think there's actually probably a void in this. I don't want to write a book, but somebody else probably could. I think mentor-wise, like, I watch a lot of guys. You know what I mean? Like, I watch a lot of guys that are out there. I've followed different guys over the course of years. I have buddies who are still in New York that still trade. So I talk frequently with them. So I think there's a lot of different things you can get from pieces and people. So I don't think it's one person, though.
All right, so tell us about Options Alpha, what you're doing with your data, with your back testing, and walk through a potential setup here.
Yeah, so what we're doing at Option Alpha and trying to do is really, I mean, look, in this industry, it's so shady. Everyone's selling, courses and training for money, right? So we give all that stuff away for free. And I've done that from day one because honestly, I don't need to make money doing that, right? So I do that. I also post my trades publicly every single day. So I go and record a video every day that I'd make a trade, I post it, win, lose, or draw, whatever, just so that there's that accountability out there. And so we started to venture into last year, started to buy a lot of data raw, which is ridiculous. I'm totally in the wrong business. I should have been in the data business because those guys make a mint. We started to buy data and built a backtesting software that we're going to be kind of rolling out here in the next 30 to 60 days, depending on, you know, beta users and how they're using it right now. But the whole idea here is just to make it a little bit easier for people to figure out, you know, if a strategy that they're testing right now or that they want to, you know, deploy is going to work or could potentially work. And of course, there's tons of flaws with backtesting versus future casting and everything. And, you know, like we realize that, but I think that's just giving people a context and framework for, you know, potential strategy that they're going to put on right now and how that might actually, you know, work out over the next, you know, 200, 300 trades.
And do you pay a lot of attention to technical analysis?
Yeah. So I do when it comes to like making a trade. I wouldn't say like I get signals and say, okay, this technical signal gets me into a trade. What my strategy is, and I guess my philosophy on this is, you know, the more frequently we trade and the more we replicate and act like a high frequency shop, the better, right? But as retail traders, we can only do so much, right? Before it becomes detrimental commission wise and, you know, just ability to do it. So I like to get into a lot of trades and, you know, have a lot of, you know, different positions going. So the only time I'll really look at technicals is if I'm just like skewing a trade, right? So if I look at technicals and, you know, maybe I'm getting some, you know, sell signals or it's getting a little bit overbought, I might skew a trade in one direction or another, but I don't use them admittedly for any entry. Like I won't ever say, you know, I got a sell signal, so now I'm going to, you know, go short this thing.
All right. So are you more of an option buyer, option seller?
Totally option seller.
Totally options. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and I think we talked about this yesterday too. Like if I said like the 90, you know, 10 rule of like 90% of the time we do option selling, 10% of the time, it's okay to take directional trades. Like I took a directional trade on the Dow. Like I think the Dow will go down over the next 60 days. Right. So I'll take that bet. But it's not the bulk of what we do.
All right. So walk us through, you know, a potential trade for today, maybe something that you're looking to put on some, what's on your radar.
Yeah, I think, you know, we traded Tesla or First Solar last night. So for earnings, so that ends up, it's going to end up working out pretty well because we did the straddle at 36.5. So that works out pretty well because they're just below 36 this morning. I think we're going to try to do basically the same thing with Tesla today. They've got earnings after the close. The only problem with Tesla right now is that, you know, unlike First Solar, you know, implied volatility for these options is not insanely high, right? Like the front weeklies in First Solar is about 112%, you know, implied volatility. The front weeklies in Tesla is about 91. I mean, that's still high, obviously. So it's really high IV. I think what we're going to end up doing is probably do some sort of wide strangle in Tesla. So expected move, maybe $16, $17, $18. Tesla always usually ends up moving much more than people expect, right? So we'll try to do something maybe, you know, $20 out on either end, you know, sell the 260, sell the 300s. If the stock ends up trading around 280 today, I think it'll trade up on this, you know, before earnings.
Hi, Kirk. Dennis Stick. Just a quick question. You know, you talk your straddle or your strangle. How do you determine, you know, whether you're going to take, you know, a stance where, okay, well, I'm going to sell the straddle, I'm going to, you know, potentially, you know, make a bullish bet on this. How do you determine that when you're looking at an individual stock heading into an earnings report?
Yeah. So for earnings, I always like to just be neutral, right? So okay. I know from my time in, you know, REITs and covering these companies, like I would know, you know, you would know because you have, you know, knowledge to the CEO and CFO if they're going to have a good quarter or not. You just don't know how the market's going to react. I think you guys even talked about it just briefly on the show this morning. I forget which one it was, but they actually had, it was First Solar, like, you know, like they had good numbers, but not as good as people expected, right? Yeah. So I think that expectation piece is what people miss all the time. So I always try to go neutral into it. The decision for me for straddle versus strangle or even like an iron butterfly is just, you know, like how aggressive are people getting into this, right? Like, and is that going to be more overstated than not long term? And so like a lot of the backtesting that we've done in most of these stocks, and we, you know, do them across 50 to 100 different stocks for earnings, the more aggressive that implied volatility is, you know, heading into that event, the more likely long term they're more likely to, you know, kind of undershoot those expectations. And that's probably exactly what we saw with First Solar. Probably it's going to be a little bit closer with Tesla for sure. But First Solar, people had big expectations and the stock just really didn't move.
general question. When you're looking at the VIX, and you know, obviously as an options trader here, volatility is a lot to do with option pricing. With the VIX at 11.77, I'm not an options guy, I'm more of an equities guy, but I dabble into options every once in a while. I just look at the VIX at 11, I was like, the premiums out there got to be pretty tough to get, you know, when you're an option writer. Like, where are you grabbing premium?
yeah. This is why I try to tell people this all the time. It's like, it doesn't go away, right? So, like, the premium doesn't go away. It's just really, really small. Like, so the margins, if you will, are incredibly small. So, you know, I think we just have to go with, like, the low-hanging fruit for the time, right? And so some of the things that we're in right now are things like, you know, XRT, FXE, et cetera. You know, like, some of these low-hanging fruit that just have the highest IV right now, right? And that's not the best, right? And we're not aggressive into them, but at least we can, you know, stay active and keep positions in them. But, yeah, it stinks for sure.
All right. Before we let you go, could you just explain that potential Tesla trade? Is it something you do intraday and then wrap it up, or is it something you're going to be holding through the report?
Yeah, so we'll hold it through the report. We always like to get into them end of the day, as close to the close as possible, just to make ourselves as neutral to the move as, you know, as we can. So, I mean, I'm assuming Tesla's going to trade up. It's already up pre-market a little bit. So if it gets up around 280, we'll end up selling around the 300 strike calls and selling around the 260 strike puts, try to do a strangle around it.
Okay, bring it into premium. Kirk Duplessis, founder and head trader at Options Alpha, joining
That's
us.
Okay.
Kirk, great information here, and I sure hope we can get you on again.
Awesome, man. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kirk.
All right, another approach to options trading. A lot of the some similarities between him and Nick as far as being on the selling side of the options market.
Yeah, and notice the good options traders always come on the show and say they're net sellers of options. You don't make money in the long run buying options. Everybody wants to do it. Everybody wants to have that big winner, you know, buy the lottery ticket, you know, and end up, you know, rich here overnight with options. And it doesn't happen like that. Like, Nick is slow and steady grinding it out. Kirk kind of sounded the same. You know, he figures, you know, and he looks at the premiums, obviously, but a net seller of options. So he's like the insurance company, you know, selling it to the options. And that's why these guys make money in the long run, because they're on the sell side of them. And I really believe that, you know, even from my options experience, I've tried to buy options a lot of times in my life, and a lot of times they expire worthless. So, you know, I've learned too, you know, I used to, you know, run covered calls against my own individual portfolio. And, you know, that works to a certain extent as well. It works great in a flat market. It works great in, you know, this, you know, even in a slow trending market. It just, you know, you got a raging bull. Sometimes it doesn't work great when you're writing covered calls, because you get called away on all your stocks. But, you know, and obviously in a bear market, you know, it doesn't work great either, because then you're stuck, you know, with a lot of stocks, you know, and you're, you know, going down here, and you're not getting as much premium back in. But, you know, there's time and place. But at the same time, I think there's overall, there's more money to in writing options than there is in buying options.
And just one final comment I didn't get to him when I spoke to him yesterday. You know, I was asking him about the market, the general, you know, the uptrend, when this market's going to stop going up. And, he, you know, he said, you know what, the way he's trading now, he has a strong cash position. You know, he's not heavily committed one way or another. So, you know, if there's a blow off high, you know, market goes up 300 points one day, you know, he's not going to be net short and on the, you know, bad end of things. Whereas if we have a big sell off or something, it's not like he's going to be long, not, you know, long the float. He'll be, you know, he's nimble. And right now he said he's about at his highest cash position that he's had in some time. And he did trade through the financial crisis as well. And he said that one thing that really saved him was having the powder dry to make, you know, to make moves into these exaggerated moves in the market. So, great guest there. We got to about 6 minutes here before we bring in a big-time money manager, Mark Yesko of Morgan Creek Capital Management. Are we still on earnings, or are we going to ratings?
We can be. There is a lot of little earnings reports here. Like, just, you know, just fly through a few of them if you want. Red Robin reported, RRGB. That stock is trading up 4 points here in the pre-market, although only 350 shares have traded. So you could say that's still price discovery happening there too. You had Lazy Boy report earnings there. I was trading a little bit there last night. SO, which is Southern Company, reported earnings. We're still waiting on the TJX report there. You also had Dish report, D-I-S-H. So if there's any specific issue that you guys would like to talk about in the chat, let us know. We can jump into the technicals. One that I do want to mention here, which is widely followed, is Toll Brothers. And TOL had a lot of stuff. They actually initiated a dividend as well, I believe. TOL, Spencer, give us the details.
42 cents versus 35 cents, revenue $920.73 million versus $903.81. So nice beat on both.
Stock trading up 5% here in the pre-market. They did initiate a dividend. I thought I saw 8 cents because they never paid a dividend. So this is the first time they've initiated a new quarterly dividend. Investors like to get paid, so they like to hear that kind of stuff. Makes them feel, you know, like I like to get paid as well. So you get value investors more interested once you get the dividends going. But these home builders have just quietly been consolidating here for a long period of time, especially Toll. Now we get a breakout on earnings here, Joel. What are you thinking?
Oh, man, I'm thinking I would have loved to trade this thing when they took out the institutional seller at $32, just above that area. How many sessions in a row? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 out of 6 sessions. Highs right around the 32. We got rid of that pesky seller here, and now we're trading up in the 33 handle. This is a little too much for me. A little too much too fast. Pre-market high, 33.88. That takes out your high at 33.48 in November. Maybe see what happens at 34, your half and whole number. For me, I probably wait till it comes back into the 32 area, as that area will act as good support. And Ethan or somebody was asking about EDIT, and it was a while ago, and I just didn't want to forget about it. Nice run. Nice run up here on the dailies. When I look at this, the first thing that sticks out to me, I mean, you do have a massive four-day run here. But going back not too long ago, you found some resistance. You had 4 to 5 highs in a 28 handle. We're trading 27.40 today. Yesterday's high was 28.50. So that's going to be a big area. If it could just blow through that 28.50 area today, I'll say, yeah, this puppy's going to keep going. But just those highs back from last year in the $28 handle from July makes me think you may have hit a short-term top.
I'm taking a little bit of heat in the chat for my options comments there. And Ace and Larry both pointing out, Ace pointing out that there is some good traders out there that do make money buying options. And for sure there is. You know, but the point I was trying to make is that there's just, you know, a lot of people want to come in. And, you know, and Larry's making this point as well. They're buying options that are too far out of the money and too short in time. You know, and they're going for the real lottery ticket as opposed to, you know, making, you know, directional bets using options. So there is some good traders out there. Just from my experience and, you know, what I have, you know, seen is, you know, I see traders like Nick, and they have a strategy where they're, you know, selling options, and they seem to do better than, you know, the option buyers. That's what, you know, I've noticed in my 17-year trading career. So those are my observations. The one thing Larry's making a great point here as well, he's saying selling puts for most people can lead to a major disaster and should be used by pros only. I agree with that. If you're just selling naked puts or naked calls out there, you will eventually have that black swan event that really hurts you. And that's why a trader like Nick, he never leaves himself open ended. And what I mean by that is when he has a trade on, you know, and he writes a put, he'll buy a lower strike put to protect himself of that black swan event, because that is the event that, you know, wipes everybody out in options, in the options rating world. When you have a really, you know, significant move in a security that was unexpected, and you were writing, you know, your put for a dollar, and all of a sudden, you know, you're $10 in the hole or $20 in the hole, and you're in big trouble there. That's the one thing you got to remember is, you know, it's good to not leave yourself open-ended buying a lower strike, or, you know, depending on which side you're on, like Nick Shaheen does, is a way to protect yourself against that black swan event.
On the show, we just like to talk about different strategies, have different people on with different ideas, and figure out what works best for you. Spencer, time for another break?
Yep, real quick though, TJX just did a report, so I am going to interrupt with that. Q4 EPS $1.03 versus $1 was the estimate, so they beat the EPS by 3 cents. Sales 9.5 versus 9.44, so they beat that slightly as well. They're also raising their buyback plan from $1.3 billion to $1.5 billion. They're raising their dividend from 26 cents a share to 31 and a quarter cents a share, and they also see their fiscal year EPS at $3.80 to $3.89. 379 was the estimate. So overall, I would say a pretty good report there. Now it's time for our final break of the day. We're going to grab Mark Yusko. He is the CEO and CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management. So we'll be right back with Mark.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Ben Zingo's Pre-Market Prep. We're on the line now with Mark Yusko. He is the CEO and CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management. Mark, how's it going this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. Great to be with you guys, as always.
Thanks for coming on, as always. So, got to get your thoughts now on this rally. It's like the most hated rally in history. How are you?
No. I just literally. It's so funny. You must have just read my tweet.
I did. I just tweeted this. I did.
I'm calling BS on this narrative.
Okay.
This is not the most hated rally. It's just crazy. I mean, mutual fund cash is at an all-time low. Individual exposure to financial assets is at an all-time high. Every sentiment indicator is nearly off the charts on bullishness. Number of bears is near the record lows. I'm just calling BS on the most hated rally.
Okay, so it's not the most hated rally, and I did read that tweet, so that was a setup, and you knocked it out of the park.
And you reeled me right in and got me all riled up.
Yeah, I did. So what is your forecast now for the next, 3 to 6 months out? How far do you see this rally going?
You know, here's the interesting thing. So I started about 18 months ago with this construct that I called hashtag 2000.2.0. And it really looked to me like we were setting up for a repeat of 2000, 2001, 2002 in 16, 17, 18. You know, you had an election cycle, you had an 8-year president, a new president coming on to an 8-year president in 16, just like 2000. Then you had a small, shallow recession in 01. And you had this drawn-out bear market. You know, normally, when you have a recession, the market drops about 38% on average. And what's interesting is we had everything going that way, right? Earnings started to fall. They fell about 20%, peak to trough. But the market didn't fall. So there's something strange going on. And they didn't call a recession. So, you know, some would say we're in a recession. Others would say we're not. Either way, any way you look at it, there are certain indicators that look negative, certain others that look positive. But all of that now may be displaced by my new hashtag, and I just wrote my new letter about it, released it on Monday, called hashtag, you know, Welcome to Hooverville. And I think if you look at the similarities between Donald Trump and Herbert Hoover, they're really kind of frightening. You know, you look at he was only the third president elected without experience, never been elected to political office before, just like Hoover and just like William Henry Taft. We had a Republican sweep for the fourth time in the last century, promises of all these reforms, just like in 1928. And the market believed all of Hoover's promises and rallied really sharply from his election to a peak in on Labor Day of 1929. So I wrote this letter saying that if we have that type of bubble kind of hope trade, we could hit 2800 before we crack. And the problem is, you know, I wrote the letter on Roger Babson. Roger Babson was founder of Babson College, but he's also this great entrepreneur and businessman and market forecaster. And he actually called the crash on September of 1929. Now, he also called it 1928, 1927, so people didn't listen to him. But he said there's going to be a crash and it's going to be terrific. And he was a big believer in Newton's third law that says for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if we go from what are just silly valuations today, overvaluation, to stupid valuations by Labor Day, then I think we could have a much bigger downside than a normal recessionary downside.
So. Mark, Dennis Dick here. I just want to follow up with you on this. And, you know, this kind of sets up, I kind of agree with your narrative to a certain extent, because here you are, and this last, you know, really you could call it even the last 7 years, but I mean really relentless in the last, you know, year or so. Every time we pull back 1 or 2% in the market, everybody's jumping in. They buy every little pullback here. It's like learned behavior that if you buy the 1% pullback in the market index will be back up in a week and you'll be back up and making money here again. And everybody has done that again and again and again. You have so many people, especially newer people in the market, even coming and doing the same thing as well. And newer portfolio managers as well, coming and buying the dip all the time. And they've been rewarded for it again and again and again. But one time, it's not going to come back right away. And if you get all those people who just start buying, panicking, that is where your whole crash thesis, I believe, what comes into play. So do you see that potentially happening here, you know, playing out like that?
Yeah, look, we know a couple things. We know that gravity works, right? There is a level of valuation. We all don't float around when we're walking around. We stand on the ground and gravity works. And same thing's true in equity prices is, trees don't grow to the sky is the famous saying. And we know that there is a valuation level that is required for equities. And the narrative has been, in the low interest rate environment, you can pay more for stocks. I'm like, well, let's think about that for a second. What do low interest rates represent? They represent slow economic growth. If you have slow economic growth, that means your future profits growth is going to be lower, not higher. So you should actually maybe pay less for future earnings, not more. But that's a whole another, we could spend a whole day talking about that. But the problem as I see is you've got this, just relentless upward march of prices over the last 7 years, as you accurately said. The problem is earnings are the same level they were in 2011, right? We had an earnings rise and we had an earnings fall, but earnings are basically the same. And this is, operating earnings, what I call earnings before bad stuff, not the reported earnings, but the actual earnings of the companies are about the same, $91 versus $88. $89 today, $91 in 2011, yet the market is up almost 75%. And that's all because the multiple, the PE ratio went from 15 to 26. So paying $26 for a dollar of earnings usually has not worked out very well for investors. And the thing that I'm more scared about is how much money is in passive, particularly in ETFs. And the reason that's so scary is they're not allowed to think, right? They have no judgment.
Good point.
They must buy things no matter what the price, and they must sell if people start selling. So once people start selling, you don't have a specialist who has to commit capital to keep the market calm. You don't have institutions, with judgment, with professionals managing the money. You've got these what I call dumb, and I don't mean dumb unintelligent, I mean rule-based. You've got these rule-based things, and the ones that really scare me are these things like low-vol ETFs. Because what they've done is they've taken a stock like ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil is a diversified conglomerate. It's traded for 40 years between 12 and 15 times earnings because it's an industrial conglomerate and it's cyclical. It should never trade above 15 times. Because of these low-vol ETFs, because its stock price has very low volatility, it's now trading at 41 times earnings. That ends really, really badly. And when that low vol ETF starts to unwind because the volatility of Exxon starts to go up when people sell, it will sell more, which will cause the volatility to go up, which will cause it to sell more. And it becomes a reflexive, vicious cycle instead of this reflexive, virtuous cycle that we've been in.
Mark, just talking about valuation here too, and obviously there's companies like Tesla here, which, I can't understand it from a valuation perspective whatsoever, but I mean, momentum starts going and it doesn't seem to matter, valuation. When does valuation start to matter?
It is the $64 trillion question around the world is when does valuation matter? And everybody says, what's the catalyst? And I'm like, well, the problem is in battle, It's always the bullet you don't see that kills you, right? If you see it coming, you can get out of the way. You can duck. So it's always something that you don't see. And, you know, it's everything from, you know, what starts a war? You know, the assassination of an archduke. I mean, how does that start a world war? Well, it did. I mean, there's always some catalyst that looks very clear in hindsight. The problem, I think, right now is you have so much capital that is being managed by people who've never experienced a down market. We got a lot of young people who've only known an up period. They've only known falling interest rates. They've only known an accommodative Fed. And I think there are a couple things that could happen. One is the Fed could decide that they are behind the curve in inflation, and they could really start jacking up rates and change the discount rate, which would cause PE multiples to fall. Second would be the rise of inflation. I mean, PPI in China has just exploded in the last 6 months. It's gone from negative 5% to positive 6%. That usually finds its way into finished goods in the U.S. with about a 6-9 month lag. So there could be some of that. It could be literally, you know, a handful of smart people, as Charles Kindleberger called them, the insiders. And he didn't mean like insider trading. He meant people who are close to companies and who really understand the value of companies. And he called it the Kindleberger cycle. Is, you know, when things get really, really ugly, the insiders start selling. And you can actually track that. There's measures of insider selling, and a couple weeks ago, those hit record levels. Insiders don't sell at bottoms, right? They tend to sell at the top. They distribute to the, you know, the people who are had got the FOMO problem, fear of missing out. So I think that's another one to watch. But, you know, another one could be, look, if there is a slowdown in economic activity this year, which it appears there could be. Fourth quarter GDP was much below what everybody thought. They keep revising first quarter GDP down almost every day now. And I think if that surprises to the downside, that could get people nervous. Margin pressures are rising because of rising materials prices, commodity prices. I think we're in a new commodity bull market. I think that's going to cause profits to drop. If profits don't surprise to the upside and, you know, multiples are where they are, that could trigger. And then the last thing is the Trump trifecta. You know, they're going to pass tax reform and regulatory reform and fiscal spending, and it's going to be awesome. Well, here we are, you know, a month and a half in, and we got no legislation even being proposed. We got no plan. I mean, no plan at all for how we're going to get there. We keep talking about things that really I don't think matter, like travel bans and immigration policy. And if those things don't happen, this, you know, Trump bump, Trump trade, whatever you want to call it, could unravel very quickly because it's a hope trade. And hope is not an investment strategy.
Mark, one more and we'll let you go. When you were on our show in October, you said that there were very few longs that you liked. You discussed a couple pockets here and there, semiconductors, cheap tech.
Yep.
Has anything changed since then? Are you still on? Has that changed or no?
Now, look, I'm glad I said semiconductors. Semiconductors have been en fuego, and I think they're going to stay in fuego. You know, this Internet of Things, it's not mature yet, but it's maturing, and it's going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. You know, what's happening in AI and machine learning and all these buzzwords everybody talks about, and they're throwaway words, but they're real. I mean, what's happening in technology has the potential to really be the next industrial revolution. I mean, it really is extraordinary what's going on. So semiconductors, I read a stat the other day that today there are 3 semiconductors per person on the planet. And that by 2025, which is not that far from now, there could be 1,000. Now that seems really crazy to me, but that's the way these things work. Human beings don't do linear math well. I'm sorry, we don't do exponential math well. We do linear math quite fine. We don't do exponential math well. So the idea that suddenly everything's going to have a microprocessor in it is really kind of extraordinary thing. So I think semiconductors still look pretty interesting. healthcare looks interesting to us. Healthcare has been beaten up, beaten down. It's the only sector that was negative last year, particularly biotech, down 20-something percent. We think there's a lot of value there, and we think that, you know, all this rhetoric about going after drug companies and drug pricing is ridiculous, because Congress makes the rules, not the president, on this, and Congress is funded by the pharma industry. So don't even think twice that any of those rules are going to get passed through Congress. It's not going to happen. And then there's some other things. You know, we love emerging markets. We've loved emerging markets for a while. We think the commodity super cycle is back. We think the commodity trade is going to continue to do well. That was my big surprise last year that worked out best. You know, everything from copper to iron ore are really flying today. And we think that the companies related to mining and materials and all that has to do with China, for the first time in their history, is actually rationalizing capacity. They're actually shutting down unprofitable coal mines and iron ore mines, and that is a huge deal. They're actually getting serious about pollution. So there are some things out there that are interesting. You know, Argentina is probably going to get included in emerging markets this year. We think RG looks fantastic. Now, it is up 25% year to date, so maybe it needs a pause that refreshes, but we think it can go up a lot from here on inclusion. And then we think China A shares have the chance to be included in June. That's a long shot, but if that were to happen, think about this. Chinese equity markets are the second largest in the world, and they have a zero weighting in the MSCI indices, the A shares.
Yeah, Mark, I totally...
That's just an unbelievable stat. So.
Yeah, I agree with that China point. I've been looking into this. This is now, what, the third or fourth year now that it's up for inclusion. So that'll come in early June. So I too am anticipating that, and we'll see how that impacts things. Mark Yusko, CEO and CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management.
No, Mark, I just want to say, next time you come on, you know, say what you really feel.
You don't want me to pull my punches. But you know, Joel, here's the thing. You guys make it so easy, and you actually let me answer questions instead of just look for sound bites. You know, I appreciate the opportunity to talk. So I'll try to be less reserved next time, I promise.
All right. We appreciate your wisdom. Mark Yusko, CEO and CIO of Morgan Creek Capital Management. Speak to you again soon, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Be well.
Thanks. Thanks, Mark.
He's great.
All right. Awesome.
He's great.
Everything he says makes a lot of sense. It's the timing that we just don't know. And, you know, and I think Mark would probably say that as well. I mean, we don't know when this is going to unravel. But, you know, there is a lot of people out here who, you know, he made a great point saying that I haven't experienced a bear market. You know, newer fund managers haven't, you know, all they've known is this, I buy the dip, I make money. I buy the dip, I make money. Or, you know, I buy the dip, I'm getting cheaper than, you know, the other guy because he bought it yesterday. So I just have to beat my, you know, I just have to beat the other fund managers and outperform them. So if I'm buying cheaper, I'm buying cheaper. Eventually that will unravel. And, you know, and he's talking about the, you know, the ETFs and, you know, and obviously, you know, money that is just, you know, not, you know, active investing, but just passive investing and just obviously following it. And it will unravel at one point in time. There will be another bear market. We don't know when. And, you know, as traders, we got to kind of go, you know, as shorter-term traders, we got to kind of go with what is working, and what is currently working is buy the dip, and that's, you know, kind of like a self-fulfilling thing. But always be aware that it doesn't have to continue to work, and be aware to flip the script, you know, just like that, because the bear market, when we eventually have it, nobody's going to predict it. You know, it's not going to be obvious. It's just going to come out of the blue. It's going to be some crisis or something that happens overnight, and it's going to be ugly. And you always have to be prepared for that as well. That's why even when we were talking about the option strategies just a few minutes ago, talking about writing naked puts, because it's worked in this market for a long period of time. Eventually, that strategy will unravel, though, and, you know, you'll be caught holding, you know, the bag. And at the end of it, you need to, you know, think about that black swan event or that potential for, you know, a market, you know, type of, you know, crash event, because we do set up for something like that. You know, it could happen. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 2 years from now. It will happen again, though. And if you're not prepared for those outside events, you know, and you're just throwing risk out, you know, and just, you know, doing very risky investments there, eventually that will come back and bite you. So always remember, you know, that it doesn't have to go up forever, this market.
And one point I thought that he made, and I'm going to probably go back and listen to that one again, it's just about, you know, the policies and, you know, the Trump rally, the administration, and what actually has to take place in order to implement these policies. So he put it in a great perspective. Really enjoyed Mark. Maybe we'll get him on for a longer interview. Flack UK suggesting that. He said he could hear him talk, listen to talk for an hour.
And, me too. Yeah, oh, he's fantastic.
I agree. There's, you know, we've got a handful of guests we can say that about. 8:55, 5 minutes before we end today's show. Did we touch on any ratings yet? Are there any worth mentioning?
No, there was a few ratings, so we can fly through them in like 1 minute here. So Walmart catches the analyst Chase Price upgrade there from Bank of America. Walmart gets upgraded to buy, price target $88. We know that's a strategy in itself that we employ here on the show, where the analyst Chase Price, when you have a stock reporting, you know, in the pre-market, the following day, the analysts tell overnight to chime in on, and they often follow suit. So you get the follow through Walmart upgrade here in Bank of America. UPS is getting downgraded at Bank of America. That's kind of one out of the blue. UPS is trading down 2 points on that downgrade there. Ooh. TripAdvisor also getting downgraded here at Cowen and Company. Spencer, any other ones that jumped out at you?
Ralph Lauren caught downgrade there from Atlantic Equities. What else am I seeing? Nothing.
Advanced Solar, I think, was downgraded.
First Solar.
Canadian Solar, too. CSIQ downgrade JP Morgan.
Yep, First Solar downgraded at Credit Suisse. And those are the only ones that really jumped out to me.
All right.
In Balance Land, just to talk quickly in Balance Land here, Bristol Myers, $118,000 to buy. Obviously, Uncle Carl, the news was there right near the close yesterday that he's taken a position here in Bristol Myers. You saw the big pop and then, you know, the pullback there because it just got ridiculous when the thing went up to over $57, and now it's at $55.10. So if you Johnny Come Lately's buying it here, that heard Uncle Carl's in, chasing Uncle Carl. Bank of America, $500,000 to sell. That's the second day in a row we saw some significant selling pressure at the open in some of the banks. Abbott Labs, $100,000 to sell. That's kind of out of the blue. Really, Deere, $85,000 to sell, which is symbol DE. It's about it. There's, you know, they're kind of mixed. I'd say the financials looking weak here, though, this morning.
I just saw a serious spike to your pre-market high. Not sure what that's about. It may not be anything.
522 now. And that, you know, originally, the original catalyst for that move was Warren Buffett.
That was last week.
Yeah, but that's what started, kickstarted the serious rally. And you know what? There's certain managers that people follow for, you know, a longer period of time. And one that, like, you know, I would say, like, Warren Buffett, you know, has that more followers as opposed to Uncle Carl there, where it's kind of like, a, you know, you jump in and you chase it. But, you know, then when the dust settles, you know, not a lot of people. But Warren Buffett makes a lot of good longer term calls. He's not one that's jumping in and out of stocks. And when he's making a bet on something, portfolio managers take note. And often you do see continued follow through when Warren Buffett enters a position.
All right. It's 8:58 now. We actually teased this yesterday, but we're going to announce it today. Special announcement that next week you will be able to meet Joel and Dennis in real life because they'll be at the New York Traders Expo. That's next Monday or Sunday through Tuesday, I believe, in New York City in the Marriott Marquis in Times Square. I know Dennis, you'll be there with Bright. Joel will be there with a few other people from Benzinga. Jason Resnick, our CEO, will be there as well. And I'll be back here, so we'll still be doing the show, but we'll be doing the show with you guys out in New York. And so if you want to meet and hang out with Joel and Dennis and a bunch of the guests that we've had on our show, I think about 20 or so of the speakers that were on the site, 20 or 25 have been on the show before. So you can hang out with them. Phil Davis will be there. I think the goal for Joel will be to get everyone else who hasn't been on the show onto our show.
New York Trader Expo, Bright Trading, we actually will have a little kiosk there as well. So I'll be hanging out with Rob Friesen there and talking, you know, about, you know, proprietary trading. But we're going to do some other presentations there as well. I'll do one on high frequency trading. We'll do some presentations on statistical arbitrage. I know Rob is speaking at the main venue as well on Monday at 3:30. And Rob's an excellent speaker. We're going to have Rob Friesen on Friday. So we're excited that, you know, if you're in New York, if you listen to us in New York, drop by the New York Trader Expo. It's actually free to get in there, so we'd love to see you come on, you know. And then we'll be over at the Bright Trading, I'll be at the Bright Trading kiosk, and Joel will be kicking around there too, so come on down.
And if you come to the Pride Trading kiosk and Dennis or I are not there, just look for me, you know, snazzy dress in a sport coat. And then look for someone walking around in a number 99 Wayne Gretzky jersey. That will be Dennis. So
best hockey player of all time.
Yeah. Okay.
Everybody tells me Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, it's Gretzky.
All right.
Yeah, Spencer, I don't think that is up for debate. Anyway, tomorrow's show, we got Todd Gordon. Love Todd Gordon, one of our favorites. He will also be at the expo, actually, coming to think of it. He is a CNBC contributor. He's the founder of Trading Analysis. And we'll also be joined by Murad Oskar. He is a fintech guy, I believe. Will be at the Fintech Awards in May. Hope you enjoyed today's show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed our chats with both of our guests, with Mark and Kirk. And that's it for us today. We'll be back with you folks tomorrow. Please remember that all the information, material, and content on our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Have a good rest of your day. We'll be back with you folks on Thursday.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.